Hi, today is June 22nd, 2019. This is Mobile Views Podcast 296, and we're going to talk mostly about Google stuff, but actually John and I were giving some serious thought to calling it Cupcake Views.
Well, we just have a lot of views on cupcakes.
Yeah,
we do. We are well-informed cupcake people.
And we have tried many, many, yes. Many. Also, donut views. Donut views would be popular, too.
I actually bought donuts today because I have the conclusion that my favorite breakfast in the mornings is a chocolate-enrobed donuts with coffee. That's a pretty good breakfast option.
Yeah. Boy, there is a... Let me go look it up. No, now that you've gotten me on this riff. there are... For some reason, in Portland, Oregon, there are some really, really good donuts. My daughter's favorite Portland donut place is called Blue Star Donuts. I think they have... In addition to being in the city itself, they also have one at the airport, so you can pick them up coming and going. And, of course, the more famous probably is Voodoo Donuts, which has some really unusual-looking donuts. But anyway, both of them are good. I wouldn't say I prefer one or the other. I think I enjoy both of them. If either one wants to sponsor donut views, we're game. John and I are down for that. Yeah, we can have like a donut of the week and all kinds of stuff.
I will reserve at least 3,000 calories of my weekly intake just to donuts if someone would like to sponsor.
Any rate, so anyone from Voodoo Donuts or Blue Star Donuts or Krispy Kreme or whomever, you want to sponsor
anywhere
us?
Anywhere that makes donuts.
We will talk about...
People that like to make donuts and send them to people, we'll take anything.
We'll be donut views. We're not proud. You know that. Okay. Nope. So, couple of things. This was a very... Well, I won't say it was a news light week, but for the kinds of things John and I are interested in. I mean, if you're interested in... Cryptocurrency, it was a big week, with the whole Facebook's, taking over the universe by creating their own currency thing. And there's a bunch of other stuff, but for me, just stuff that I do. Here's what interested me. So I can't say I use Google Sheets a lot. I use it once or twice a week, maybe. I have used it more often than that when the need arises, but... perfectly honest, I'm often, if I need a spreadsheet, I'm usually in Microsoft Excel because that's what we use at work. But I did discover this neat thing. If you bring up sheets.google.com, there is a star at the bottom right with the word explore next to it. Now, I quite frankly never noticed it before until I read a little article. Yeah, it was in a Google blog. Read an article titled Pivot to the Cloud, Intelligent Features in Google Sheets Help Businesses Uncover Insights. Now, I know about pivot tables. So that's pivot to the clouds gives you a clue that it's a pivot table or anything. But what I didn't know was if you click on that star and you have data somewhere in your spreadsheet enough that it can take a look at it using its AI-ish kind of algorithms, I assume. It gives you kind of, those of you familiar with Microsoft Power BI, BI is business intelligence, will say, this is like Power BI, except it's free. It will give you insight into your data. Now, some of that insight is bogus, and it doesn't mean anything. But you might find some of it useful, especially if you're not a statistician. Things that you may not have thought about correlating or... sort of a regression analysis or something. Then it's pretty cool. I can't say I found anything mind-blowing yet, but I just find the idea interesting. If I had something with data that maybe I wasn't that familiar with and I didn't have a working theory, it'd be kind of interesting to just see what pops up.
I'm playing around with it with a couple of spreadsheets that I have.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. It's not probably the most useful. It's on par with the recommended pivot tables that Excel provides.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some things on there that are more, summary statistics sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, my wife has an extensive ornament collection, Hallmark ornament collection.
Mm.
And I'm bringing up her spreadsheet right now. And, the first thing it gives me is a pivot table on condition.
Mm-hmm.
And the average of the purchase price for condition, which is interesting.
That's interesting.
I don't know if that really helps. It gave me a scatter plot of the price she paid and the original list price, which is, I guess, somewhat interesting. It gave me a pie chart of a variable that was basically four values, so not all that useful. And then also, it can't figure out the lowercase yes and uppercase yes is the same value.
Right.
So it's got some interesting stuff to it, but it's not anything that I would say is a tipping point for Google Sheets versus PowerPoint Excel or
Power BI.
Power BI. I mean, honestly, the spreadsheet game is Excel.
Yeah, so, it is.
You know, that's kind of where we're at. And with Microsoft releasing, making Office over the last couple of years much more affordable for people, and in some cases free if you're just content with the Office web experience, it's interesting to see how Google Sheets and even Apple's iWork suite is really going to continue moving forward.
I forgot about iWork.
I'm waiting for the day where Apple just says, you know what? Next version of iWork is called Microsoft Excel, PowerPoint, and because really out of the three iWork suite components, Keynote is the only one that I ever thought was really, were different enough from PowerPoint.
True.
To be useful.
True.
Just because of the, and that's honestly just because it looked, you can tell a PowerPoint presentation a mile away. Sometimes it was cool to use Keynote or Prezi just to have something different.
Yeah.
The more and more that I use Microsoft Office, especially now with Office 365, the more I think, there's really no competing need for me to go do other things.
So it's a monopoly. Pretty close.
Yeah, it really kind of is. In fact, I'm actually looking up right now because I'm curious what the market share analysis, the last market share for Office suites say. Because I figure Microsoft has to be pretty high in that now.
Yeah. Well, while looking at that, go ahead.
Well, and that's interesting because according to at least one company, they're putting Google Suite ahead of Microsoft Office 365, but of course they don't have something for actually just Office.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
I guess the other question is, what's the split between Office 365 and people buying standalone? I can't imagine many people buying standalone Office components anymore. It just is not, except for a few unique instances, I don't think it's cost efficient.
Yeah, I would agree. Especially when you consider that because Microsoft sells prepaid cards in other regions of the world,
right?
If you go on eBay, you can typically buy a Microsoft prepaid card for Office that will work in a U.S. Office license for, at least 30 or 40% off what Microsoft's selling it for in the U.S. Because their volume license deals overseas, they've got vendors that can basically sell internationally, but buy at a lower rate. So Office is pretty affordable compared to what it once was.
Especially since you can share it with, used to be five, I think it's six people now that you can share one license with, which is pretty, and each of those five or six people can, I think, install it on five or six devices each person. So it's, if you have a desktop, a laptop, and an iPad, and you're kind of good. And if it's under 10 inches, it doesn't need a separate license, so you're still good. But anywho, kind of a segue from a couple of sentences ago, we talked about presentation. So I have never used Google's presentation software. I don't know if you have, John.
Years ago, I did use it for about a year to try it out.
Yeah, but one of the interesting things I just learned, again from Google's blog, is that you can now use Google Keep, which is Google's note-taking app, kind of like Evernote, not quite as powerful. You can use Google Keep to create a Google slide deck using various notes in Google Keep. So I haven't even tried it, but it sounds interesting. If you're trying kind of do maybe if you're collecting a whole bunch of information on a topic and you want to do a quick presentation or just, you know, share it with somebody, that'd be kind of a neat way to do it. You know, it's kind of almost painless if you've been collecting the data separate from the idea of a presentation. You know, like if you're a, I don't know, a coin collector or some kind of a pet thing or whatever, travel, whatever it is you're interested in. So I thought that was pretty neat. It's not something I would have thought of myself as a product idea, but there you go. So use Google Keep with Google's Slides. I think that's the name of the product itself, you know, Docs, Sheets, yep. and Slides. Don't know if I'd use it, but interesting. Next thing is I found not that useful, but it's interesting. So Google has a Chrome browser add-in called Google Suspicious Site Reporter. And basically what it does is it tells you if the website you are currently on is suspicious. And its criteria is kind of, I don't know. One of its criteria, if it's, you know, is the site one of the top 5,000 sites on the interwebs. And since, by definition, most sites are not in the top 5,000 sites on interwebs, including government sites and things like that, everything is going to flag at least one. And so, in fact, I am looking at... I'm going to move John's face over here. In fact, this is funny. Docs.google.com, which John and I are using for our show notes, is listed as a site not in the top 5,000 and got a tick mark as a suspicious site.
Aww. poor Docs.google.com.
Yeah. So, you know, it's pretty strict. So it's got, you know, one tick mark. Another flag that it raises is if you haven't been to the site you're currently reading in like the last 3 months. In other words, it's not a site you literally frequent. Which, yeah, I guess it's useful, except isn't that the point of a suspicious site thing? To go check on a site that you hardly go to let you know if it's okay? Like, you know, you're going to... for example, the sites that I'm always worried about are blogs, you know, and people should be suspicious of any blog, including mine, in a case it's been compromised or something. And also entertainment sites. So if you're looking for entertainment news on whatever it is, you know, you're interested in science fiction movies or whatever, those tend to be like heavy pop-up ads and things in my experience. And they're pretty annoying. And so I'd kind of like to be warned when I go there, hey, you know what? This site is okay, but they're going to pop ads up all over the place. You know, it's like, eh.
This site's going to be real annoying.
Yeah, maybe I don't want to. And, you know, I'll be honest. I have, and I know this is bad, but I have ad blockers on all the time. And I will delist a site or remove a site from my ad blocker, you know, on a per-site basis if I go there frequently. But sometimes a perfectly reasonable site, I don't know, like a news, like a, you know, a reputable news site, is so annoying in its ads, I turn back the blocker. Even though the news is valuable and I want to contribute to their well-being, it's just so terrible that I say, no, you know, your news is good, but those pop-up ads, not pop-up ads, but, you know, the various and sundry banners and things all over the place blocking my view of things to read.
Well, and things, you know, one of my most annoying that I think of are the listicles, you know, list articles that you do on mobile that have two items and then a next button.
Yeah, I hate that.
I just won't read that content. I'll load it up and go, guess I'm not reading this article. You know, it has to be really like, and of course, if it sounds really good, it's probably too clickbaity anyway. So,
right.
But it's amazing how groups just continue to think that the era of cram ads all around it is going to continue to work well on mobile screens.
You know, another one that drives me crazy are sites that auto-start videos. CNN, for example, is really bad. And so I have a separate Chrome extension to block auto-video playing. You know, I may watch it, but I don't want you to automatically play it just because I'm going to that page. I'm perfectly happy to read the article associated with it without seeing the video. But anyway.
We're just really turning into grumpy old men about this.
Hey, you get off of my grass.
Yeah, get off of my browser.
Yeah. All right. And the next one is a Google type thing. Is My Pixel 3 decided that... Okay, Google, stop. So both my phone and my Lenovo smart display went off, and I said, you know, okay, Gertrude. Any rate, so The Verge says that, you know, the GE company was really never serious about tablets. And, you know, you can say that pretty much about everybody except Apple. I mean, you know,
yeah,
Microsoft tablet PC that. And even the Surface. The tablet PC, they were serious, they're just terrible.
I had two tablet PCs, and I loved both of them, but yeah, they were terrible.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry I insulted your favorite things.
No, but that's the thing. I had them, and I really liked the product, but they were... You know, I remember the first time I had an iPad, and I thought, gee, why couldn't Microsoft have done this years ago?
Like 10 years ago, yeah. Literally.
Well, and they were trying to do it 10 years ago, so why didn't it work 10 years ago?
Especially when they had so much experience with a handheld PC, which was, you know, pretty close to what tablets are today, really, in my opinion. Yes.
But it was very frustrating for a long time. You know, I was a big Android supporter for a while and ran a website dedicated to Android when, you know, we had Android Thoughts up and running. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very frustrating to continually see Google making really good headway on the phone and then just continually dropping the ball with the tablet. And you'd get an Android tablet. I remember I still have the Galaxy, the original Samsung Galaxy Tab.
Oh, yeah, I have one of those.
It's my picture frame in my living room.
Yeah, mine doesn't work anymore.
Mine works really well, but I always remember thinking just how much of a wasted opportunity that thing was. Just how much more it could have done if it just had the right software, the right design, and it wasn't just treated like a giant Android phone. Although it was really just a giant Android phone.
It was. And Android tablets still are, the few that are still around. And I see them at Costco, so I know they're still making them. But I agree with you completely. I also have a Google Tab 8, I think it was called. And I thought actually it was a very fine tablet. In fact, I thought it was a very fine tablet. That was my smart display again. And I wrote up a glowing review of it because this was before the iPad mini. And it was a perfect size for me. You know, that and the Nexus 7. I think you also had one of those.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, once the iPad mini came out, it was all over. It's like, I don't need these anymore. And I still feel that way. The iPad mini, I have an iPad mini 5, as the R5s the listeners may recall. And it's serving me quite well. It's a wonderful little tablet. But any case, so, you know, the Android tablets, and more recently, Google said Google itself is not going to release any more branded Chrome OS-based tablets. Like the ill-fated Slate, which I thought was fascinating, but I couldn't figure out how I'd use it because, like Windows 10, you know, I have a Surface Pro 4 as my daily driver at work. I almost never use it as a tablet. In the 4 years I've been, well, 3.5 years I've been using it, I can probably count on one hand the number of times I have used it in tablet mode. And half of those times are probably to test it in tablet mode.
Yeah, I can agree. I don't even carry it with me anymore because for a while I carried it along with my iPad and then eventually I just thought, you know, it's fine just being a desktop, mostly desktop PC. So one of my offices it lives in and the other office, an old MacBook Air lives in, and I carry the iPad Pro between the offices.
Yeah. Oh, and so I have a question. Do you use a physical keyboard frequently with iPad Pro? I think you have one, but is it something you use frequently?
With the iPad Pro... yes, I do, because I have the portfolio case. So I use it pretty much every day.
Well, as you know, my $170 Apple smart keyboard for the iPad Pro, what was it, 9.7? Died a terrible death in less than 2 years. So I have some third-party Bluetooth keyboards I use, but most of the time I'm just using the screen. It's a wonderful tablet, a wonderful device. I guess it's not as popular as it used to be, but I'm still a believer in tablets in general and iPad mini and iPad Pro in particular. But I'm really disappointed that Chrome OS... Anyway, I was going to say was the Chrome OS tablet idea never it interested me, but not enough for me to buy one, especially at the prices they were selling it at. Because like Windows 10, I just don't see Chrome OS as a touchable interface. Yes, I use my, you know, touch screen on my Samsung Chromebook Plus, which is my daily driver at home. It's what I use most of the time at home for, you know, when I need to, like, type email and stuff. Otherwise, I use an iPad for other things. But, no, it just never seemed to me to be a touchable device, you know, or a touch-first device like an iPad is. So, not surprised, but we'll see. And, you know, Google's probably, you know, crying all the way to the bank because it's not like it's going to lose a lot of money. Anyway, you've got a rant, and then I've got a rant after you.
Okay. Well, my rant is an interesting problem that you and I talked a little bit about before the podcast.
Yeah.
Years ago, back in, you know, 2002, 2003, I started using Microsoft Money for my financial management. And it was, I mostly, at the time, I was living the life of I didn't want to use Quicken.
Right.
So I didn't use Quicken. I used Money. And then, of course, Money got discontinued. And so then at that point, I thought, well, do I go to Quicken? And I thought, no, I'll use Mint.com, right. Which at the time was the new project by Intuit.
Right.
The makers of Quicken.
Right.
And then Intuit ended up selling Quicken off because they wanted to focus everything on Mint. But now, for the last couple of years, you know, Mint has been basically exactly the same since it launched. There's really nothing new going on with it. And I kind of like the idea of having a desktop or smartphone or tablet app. And the Mint app is kind of underwhelming. There's certain things you can't do through it. And so I've been looking off and on, and I ended up finally settling on a program called Banktivity.
Hmm.
It's a Mac-only financial management program, but it does have iOS and iPad apps, and I don't use Windows enough to really care too much that I don't have it on my Windows machine. But what I think is really interesting is most of the products, there's two things that I sort of worry about with your financial management software being completely web-based. The first is backing it up, and Mint is very good about letting you directly export a CSV file of all your transactions. But you have to remember the way that Mint makes money is that they're trying to sell you referral links to other financial services companies and credit card deals and all of those things, which is somewhat of a conflict of interest, but, you know, we seem to accept that. And the other part of my rant is that these pieces of software that are available out there other than Mint, so things like You Need a Budget and Future Advisor and Personal Capital, they're all very, and Credit Karma is another one that you hear of, they're all very niche. They're, you know, You Need a Budget is great if you need a budget. Personal Capital is great if you want to manage your investments, but you can't do a budget from Personal Capital, and you can't really manage investments from You Need a Budget. So that's where we're at. It's just a weird world. Quicken is still around. I've thought about trying it, although it looks like it's not as awesome as it once was, but we'll see. It's hard to manage your money these days in the era of everything in the cloud.
Well, you know, I guess, and the question is, you know, who is the customer base? Apparently, it's not growing enough to keep these things updated or for new ones to spring up often, at least. So maybe people, A, don't have money to manage, and so don't need it.
Yeah, that's possible.
Or B.
Or they're just happy managing everything on their smartphone. And, you know, if you only have one bank and maybe one credit card, then, your smartphone can probably do everything you need it to do. But if you have accounts at multiple institutions or, you know, multiple credit cards or something like that, then a system that lets you unify that is much appreciated.
Yeah. Well, you know, So you're going with Banktivity right now, right? And it's Mac only. Is that correct?
It's Mac only, and it all is also expensive. By that, I mean the desktop app is $70. The iOS apps are both, $10, $20, somewhere around there. And then if you do want it to download your transactions through its service, you can also directly download through your institution if they support it. But if you want to do it through theirs, where then you can get updates while you're on iOS versus just on Mac, then that's going to be another $30 a year or something like that. So it is it's an expensive proposition.
But that's only for exporting. There's no other new features you get for $30 a year, right? I mean, in other words, unless you need to do that, you don't have any subscription fees.
You're right. You only have $30. That's the only subscription fee. And you also get Cloud Sync if you'd like to use it.
Yeah.
Actually, Cloud Sync is free with the product.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, actually, it sounds like a pretty good deal. I mean, you know, from the days when we used to, you know, regularly pay $40 to $100 for pretty much anything, if not more.
Yes. By that standard, it's a great deal.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, we've become very used to cheap.
Yeah. $10 or less. Well, you know, but the whole idea of exporting is an interesting one, and one of my grumps about a number of things I have. So, for example, Fitbit, which is, generally speaking, one of my favorite products of all time. I've been using a Fitbit for, I think, almost 10 years now, if not exactly 10 years. But unless you pay a subscription fee, you cannot export your data. And even if you export it, I'm not sure you could import it to anything else, you know, if you change vendors. And for me, this is a serious problem because Fitbit no longer makes a device in a form factor I like. Everything is, a wristband. And I already have a watch. I don't want to have two wristbands on. That's ridiculous. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do in my current Fitbit One, which is a wonderful, wonderful device. Stops working. I am just shy. I'm a couple days away from hitting 37 million steps on three different Fitbits. You know, the original Fitbit, the Fitbit Ultra, and the Fitbit One, which are all pretty much the same form factor. And I think, as John knows, you know, I wrote this in a post to friends in Facebook or someplace years ago. One of my few disappointments is I didn't start using something like this earlier because I kind of did the trend analysis, you know, based on my age and that, and I'm never going to hit 100 million steps, which is kind of a bummer, especially since I'm near 37 million now. But, you know, the time is against you at some point in life. But so I don't know what to do when my Fitbit One dies. I guess I could buy another Fitbit and look like an idiot wearing two wristwatches, essentially. Or I could do what some people I know do, is wear one on my ankle, which I don't think is correct. You know, I think it's supposed to be like waist high minimum, right? And your wrist is sort of at your waist, generally speaking. So that's kind of the right height. So I'm not sure, but, you know, I need to think about it because my Fitbit Ultra's battery is, I don't know, maybe I have to go to eBay and buy a used one or something. But, so nearly 37 million steps, which I think is pretty cool. And let's see, what else has it? Distance 16,700 miles on my Fitbit. And I am 61 floors short of 30,000 floors climbed. So, you know, I think I have used this quite a bit. I'm really pretty happy with the product, as in those numbers of tests. Not that, you know, I've walked all that much compared to other people, but I think it's an indicator that I've used it quite a bit, you know, as I approach 37 million steps and however many thousand miles I said that was. Let's see, what was it? Yeah, 16,704.25 miles as of today. So literally lots of miles on my Fitbit. But the data can't be exported unless, you know, I get uncheap and pay to export my data. And then I don't know what to do with it in terms of porting it to another pedometer type device. Whatever. Okay, so that's okay. But that wasn't even my rant. So my real rant is this, and this is both a real and rhetorical question. Real question to John, rhetorical to everybody else, I guess. Why does Wi-Fi hardware die so freaking fast compared to other hardware?
That's a good question. That really is. I don't know. My theory has always been that they don't. Most Wi-Fi hardware does not do very well with heat dissipation.
Yeah, I think you're right.
They burn themselves up, and it just, no one is on the consumer side. No one keeps hardware long enough where they get mad and say, "Hey, you know what happened?" I think people are, especially since more and more, fewer and fewer people have a Wi-Fi router of their own choosing.
Really,
you know, I think a lot of people get whatever their internet service provider offers to rent them each month, or the integrated units that are cable modems plus
Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi. Like, if I take a look at just in my apartment complex right now, and I look at what SSIDs I see,
right,
at least half of them are AT&T U-verse routers.
That's interesting.
You know, they prefix ATT.
Right.
And I don't know what ARIS is. ARRIS. Is that a...
That's a brand. That's okay, a cable modem brand.
Yeah. So I don't really think a lot of people that would... So here's the Venn diagram we're dealing with. The Venn diagram of people who care about their Wi-Fi enough to buy a router.
Mm-hmm.
And also people who complain when... You know, loud enough that they are, you know, getting cheated because their hardware is dying.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a big enough cloud of people.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That manufacturers care.
Yeah, I think you're right. But it is annoying.
Now, what I've never done, which I guess I could do and see how it works, would be to buy professional grade Wi-Fi access point.
I have never done that
and
either.
And see how long it lasts. That might be cheaper in the long run.
You know, that's a good point, and I have not thought about that. And I bring this up in particular because years ago, or for the last 10 years, I guess, last 20 years, I've really been having a problem with Wi-Fi routers just dying. And I should preface this by saying my cable company gives me a literal cable modem. I need to put a firewall and a switch and whatever else I need in, you know, in back of it in order to get Wi-Fi and in order to get a firewall for that matter. So, you know, all that stuff, I have a raw cable modem. That's it, you know, it shoots bits of data at me. And if I didn't have a firewall, it would shoot bits of data right back out that maybe I don't want to have being shot out.
My cable company doesn't even give me a router or a modem.
Really?
Two cable companies ago. The cable company I have right now will rent you a cable modem.
Yeah.
But cable company I had when I lived in Shreveport required BYOM, bring your own modem.
Wow. That's actually pretty good, although I guess for some people it'd be hard.
Yeah, it was either BYOM or deal with an old Doxus 2. I think they would give you a Doxus 2 router. And so if you want something more, you know, take advantage of the higher speeds, you need your own Doxus 3.
So they give you like a starter kit.
Yeah, kind of. The first one's free.
So what happened is, you know, I don't have a large home, but it is just weirdly shaped enough or something, or the materials in the walls, that I need Wi-Fi extenders. And I'm too cheap to go buy, you know, the Google Mesh thing, and I'm way too cheap to buy, like, the Eero, which has, I think, a annual or monthly subscription fee. I am not going to pay a subscription fee to manage my Wi-Fi network. Maybe I should, but I'm not. And so I bought a TP-Link, which I think is a reputable company. It's, you know, pretty well known amongst geeks, at least.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a TP-Link Wi-Fi extender maybe 2 years ago, maybe less. And it worked pretty well. In fact, I would say it worked very well for the 2 years of work, and then it just died. But I was pretty happy with it, and it wasn't too expensive. I think I maybe paid $25 for it. So I bought another one. I bought one that looked exactly like it, except it's a newer model. Well, the newer one... had a much more difficult interface. Instead of having a nice management interface that I could just set up everything myself manually, it forced me to go through a wizard, which is nuts. And it was a terrible wizard. And it was a dumb wizard. It wasn't a Dumbledore, let me tell you that. And any rate, I finally got it set up after a bunch of, you know, saying bad words and things, because it wouldn't let me do things the way I wanted to. And then it died within a week, you know, so... And it didn't work that well either, in my opinion, but... It didn't work as well as the previous model, which was A, easier to set up, and B, worked for at least, you know, nearly 2 years. So anyway, I wrote a bad review of it, and Amazon felt better, and I ordered a completely no-name brand, which I don't know if John can see.
Yep.
So this one is called, I've never heard of this brand, Rockspace. Have you ever heard of it? Rockspace.
No, it sounds like they're trying to take off a number of well-known brands with that.
Yeah.
You like know, Rackspace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at any rate, it looks kind of like a, you know, kind of looks like a TP-Link, maybe a little bit bigger. And it was like $20. So you might say, well, Todd, you're just not spending enough money. You know, going back to your thought about buying a professional or, you know, commercial grade router. And, you know, John, now that you've said that to me and I've thought about it, you have, maybe I do need to spend $500 on a, you know, on a Wi-Fi router and $100 per... extender. But at any rate, this thing doesn't look so bad. I'm checking to see if it's UL listed. It is not. That's not good. But, you know, hopefully it won't catch fire and burn my house down. So, you know, and if it lasts, oh, I'm sorry, no, no, it doesn't say UL list. So it doesn't, it hasn't gone through Underwriters Laboratories. But very few things do, by the way, when you buy electrical gear nowadays. You know, in the old days, when we were younger, you notice everything had a UL label on it, anything with electricity. Nowadays, hardly anything. So it has a default, looks like it has a default SSID and a default password. So I will give it a try sometime soon to replace my newly dead TP-Link.
So this is interesting. I'm looking at looking on eBay.
Yeah.
And you can pick up a Cisco Aeronet.
Yeah.
Wireless access point.
Which is commercial grade.
Yeah, I'm going to take a look here and see when this particular model was released.
Okay.
Looks like this particular model came out in 2015, 2014. You know, nothing.
Pretty old.
Nothing. Yeah, new.
Yeah.
But, and of course, it is just a wireless access point. It is not, doesn't have any routing capability in it. And who knows exactly how, you know, annoying it would be to set up. I assume people like Todd and I could figure it out, but your regular everyday user might not like it so much. But hey, it supports power over Ethernet, because I know you and I probably have that running through our houses completely. power over PoE.
Yeah.
But how much you think one of these is costing?
On eBay?
Yeah.
It's eBay, so I'm going to guess $100.
$12.99.
What?
That I am a bit floored, but thinking about it, these are, of course, coming out of usually the, you know, a commercial space where people are upgrading, and then they don't particularly want their stuff back. And looking at what this comes with, it doesn't, it just is the router. It doesn't even come with a DC power supply. Apparently they used it in power over Ethernet.
Right.
Sense. I guess you could get one of these and reset it and try it out. It would be actually very interesting, I think, to see what would happen.
Well, I am looking at Amazon.com right now, you know, the Center of Technology. And you can get a Cisco Aeronet wireless access point, both 2.4 and 5 gigahertz, with power over Ethernet, PoE, for $469 prime shipping.
yeah, you might want to go with a used one on eBay. And it's not just one auction. There are a lot of auctions for these things on eBay right now.
Yeah, but you know, like you said, this probably doesn't have the routing, and you probably need to, you probably need to have management system that, you know, you need to install. So you need to buy three or four or five different things just to get it running properly.
Well, or have a home network already.
Yeah.
If you have something that can already do the routing, and, you know, there are people, we do have friends that have wired networks at their homes, and so they could do it. We cannot, but they can.
You know, another name brand that I'm aware of is Ruckus, R-U-C-K-U-S. And they also have a bunch of, well, that's not true. These aren't Wi-Fi access points either, exactly. They're adaptive antennas for a wireless access point. But anyway, you can go to Costco and pick up this stuff. I mean, you'd have to think about it. It's not like buying one box, you know, like the consumer stuff. You know, you probably need a radius controller, all kinds of stuff.
But you know, I look at the network attached storage. I have this QNAP over here, and it has a built-in radius controller.
No kidding.
It, you know, it's got you know, some of the stuff that you would need, a built-in DNS and any other random thing you might need. So anymore, if you already have a network attached storage at home, you might already have everything you need.
That's a good point. So maybe you don't have to buy a whole bunch of other things. Of course, how many people have a NAS at home? Probably not that many.
But I would say the group of people who are angry about their Wi-Fi hardware burning out probably overlap quite a bit with those that have a home network of some sort. So again, we must remember that we are not the norm.
Yeah, as we are so often unfortunately told. But at any rate, so that's my rant. And I think John has given a good answer. It's heat is the enemy. Entropy is the enemy. And Wi-Fi, consumer-grade Wi-Fi access points and extenders are simply not built mil-spec for obvious reasons. I mean, you're not going to get mil-spec for $25. That's just not going to happen. And honestly, you know, if it just weren't so, if it were not so annoying to set these up with these, you know, alleged wizards, I wouldn't complain. I didn't complain about the earlier ones because they had a wizard, but they let you bypass it completely and just, you know, set up everything the way you want it. And I was, you know, really happy. Oh, by the way, WPS, I have never gotten that thing to work. You know, the automatic.
Yeah,
I've never really tried. Yeah, and I even had to act, you know, I deactivated on my access points because I don't think they're safe. But because the wizard was so annoying, I actually activated it on my access point. And it still wouldn't automatically configure, so the heck with that. Okay, so we had a whole bunch of rants, a couple of googly things, and that's about it, John. I think we're good.
As usual, we have made it through our entire, you know, podcast good discussion and random complaints about things.
Right.
So I think we're on the right track.
Yep. Although this week you didn't have shocking news like last week where, you know, you told me some of your students are writing term papers on their phone, which
I don't have anything quite as shocking as
that was. But. I've been thinking about that all week.
Next time I have a student do that, I will tell them that they are literally driving my friends into fits of frustration and confusion.
Maybe not frustration, but and confusion. Maybe, you know, like, wow, I'm out of touch with the younger generation. I really am.
Well, you know, I believe that here's what happens. In your teens, you are the younger generation.
Yeah.
In your 20s and early 30s, you realize you are no longer the younger generation, and you're annoyed by it. And in your late 30s and above, you are no longer the younger generation, and you don't want to be any part of the younger generation. Yeah. So I think you're okay.
I think you have summarized it exactly correctly. All right, folks. Once again, because I'm not under the younger generation, I can't remember when John's traveling on a super secret mission. But I know it's coming up soon. And so we'll miss a podcast or two now and then, but we'll regroup whenever John is available. And, you know, if we're not hit by a hurricane out here in Hawaii, or we don't melt, because we have had like multiple days of record heat here in Hawaii. And by that, I mean, you know, it's probably nothing to John, but when I was a kid and talking to my dad about when he was a kid, I don't think we ever hit 90 degrees in, you know, where we live, in several places where we lived in throughout the state. And now, this past month, it's hit 90 plus in several places every single day. It's pretty crazy. And as you guys have, you know, like wind chill in the winter, we have heat indexes here because of humidity. So it might be, you know, 86 or 90 degrees, but it'll feel like 91, 95, 100 degrees because of the humidity here. But at any rate, enough of ranting about weather. And this has been Cupcake Views. This has been Cupcake Views. And we will talk to you next time.